जय विष्णु पाद परमहंस परिव्रजकाचार्य स्वतम सत्य श्री श्रीमान सुनाय श्री श्री भक्त व्रज संगराज श्री प्रभुपाद की जिसका फाउंड आचार्य श्री प्रभुपाद की आनंद कवि वैष्णव नाम आचार्य श्री हरिदास ठाकुर की प्रेम से गुरु श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु विज्ञान विषय द्वैत ग्रंथार श्री गौर भक्त वृंद की श्री श्री राधा कृष्ण गौर कविना श्याम कुंद राधा कवि श्री वृंदावन धाम की श्री मायापुर धाम की गंगमाय की जमुनामाय की भक्ति देव की तुलसी देव की समेता भक्ति की जय जय गौर प्रेम ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Srimad Bhagavatam to me because I was free from all material desires. after Ambika and Ambalika, the two daughters of Kashi Raja, were taken away by force, Vijitravirya married them, but because he was too attached to these two wives, he had a heart attack and died of tuberculosis. Purport. Vijitravirya died of tuberculosis, and his wives, Ambika and Ambalika, had no issue. Therefore, after Vijitravirya's death, his mother, Satyavati, who was also the mother of Vyasadeva, asked Vyasadeva to beget children through the wives of Vijitravirya. In those days, the brother of the husband could beget children through the womb of his sister-in-law. This was known as Devarena Sutotpati. If the husband was somehow unable to beget children, his brother could do so through the womb of his sister-in-law. This Devarena Sutopati and the sacrifices of Ashwamedha and Gomedha are forbidden in this age of Kali. Ashwamedham Gavalam Ham Sanyasam Palapaitrikam Devarena Sutotpatim Kalau Pancha Vivarjayet. In this age of Kali, five acts are forbidden. The offering of a horse in sacrifice, the offering of a cow in sacrifice, the acceptance of the order of sannyas, the offering of oblations of flesh to the forefathers, and a man's begetting children in his brother's wife. Brahma Vaivarta Purana. So now we're getting now very close to the 10th canto. So all of the scene is being set for Krishna's pastimes. So what we see is that many of the names that are familiar to us have been mentioned in the lines coming down. So here the idea is that the lines of the Pandavas, the lines of Krishna, specifically Krishna, then will be explained. So now this line here is bringing down the Pandavas that went back to the sun god. His daughter was Tapati, and she married one of the earthly kings, and their son was Kuru, so that started the Kuru dynasty. And because he was the king of Kurukshetra, so from Kurukshetra that was the central place, and from there then, you know, the surrounding area up to the north then was ruled by the Kurus. So then this comes down now to this point where we have the Vijitravirya and his wives. And because of his being too attached to his wives, it's one of the faults of Kshatriyas, because of their passion. When they get too attached to their wives, so spending too much time with them, then they become too weak. And so we see here Vijitravirya died of a heart attack from having tuberculosis. So he just wasted away, basically. So then, because Satyavati, then she had born Vyasadeva to Parasara before her marriage. So here it uses the word Kshetre in the field. So that means the wives and maidservants of Vijitravirya. So the field is what is the most important. Who the field is connected to, that is who the children then are considered. So Parasara, he fathered Vyasadeva, but he's not really, in one sense, on the legal terminology, not considered the father. The father will be Vijitravirya. Because the field, or Satyavati, then was married to Vijitravirya. So because he has the field, then whatever seed was planted in the field, whatever fruit that bears, then those children then will go with that father. Though technically, it's not necessary there that they will inherit the property of the father. That will generally be by those who the father himself personally begot. But it can be, but it doesn't have to be. It depends upon the situation. It depends upon, yeah, their position. Like someone like Vidura, then he wouldn't. Because of the unequalness in the nature of the man and woman. But Dhritarashtra and Pandu, then were born of the proper standard. But Dhritarashtra was blind. So of the three brothers, then only Pandu could actually inherit the kingdom. And the other two would be considered relatives. So they would be taken care of by Pandu. But technically they would not be the heirs to the three.
throne. So this has been set up here. So then this system then was used in previous ages because of the nature of the quality of persons in those ages, then the wife being very faithful to the husband, then she wouldn't be detoured because the brother, the older brother, the brother, they're considered basically the same. The father is then manifest through the sons. So there is a similarity there. At the same time as the brother-in-law, then because of the nature of duty, he could beget sons without himself becoming attached to his brother's wife. So you're dealing here with very refined personalities. Also in this, then, there's no interaction other than begetting a child. The brother-in-law will dress very, purely, simply, and he'll approach his brother's wife. There's no big hoopla or interaction or anything like that, like in the modern days. But this is, it's an act, it's a matter of duty. So because the people don't have that qualification, then in this age it is forbidden, along with the horse sacrifice and the cow sacrifice. Because the problem is in those, then unless the mantras are chanted perfectly, then the cow or horse will not be renewed into a new body and new life. So then the point is, it's not you're killing the animal, you're just changing that animal to another body. So then the body that is left, that is used in the sacrifice. And it is observable. It's not that we say, oh, it happened. You can see it happening right there. They can put the animal in the fire, pull it out, or put in an old animal, pull out a young one, or they will kill the animal, and then they will see the next birth of that animal in whatever form it is, Gandharva, or whatever human form it may take. So it's observable. Everybody can see it. So it's not something that just people say it happened, but it did happen. So since that is not possible, then these sacrifices can't be performed either. An offering of oblations of flesh to the forefathers also is that in the worship of the forefathers, then so many different kinds of animals can be used to sacrifice. There would be lesser animals. There would be cows or other, like there's cows or horses. There'd be lesser animals. But interestingly enough, none of those animals are anything that we would consider, that would be considered in modern day. Cows, chickens, these other things, pigs that people eat nowadays, these wouldn't even be considered for the offerings. These would be animals that generally the kings, when they would go out and hunt, it would be those animals. And then within the animals, there's also a hierarchy of which animal offered that more pleases the forefathers. And the interesting thing enough is when you get to the most impressive offering to the forefathers is sweetbreads. Like that. They like that one the best. So, therefore, in this age, because the people don't have the mentality, they can't chant the mantras either for because the animal that's offered in the sacrifice of the forefather, it would also be elevated to the heavenly planets. So whatever benefit the person who offered the animal would get, the animal itself would get. So in this age, since people cannot follow the rules so strictly, there must be at least 30 or 50 pages of restrictions on this. There's at least 3, 4, 5 pages rejecting who cannot sit at a Shraddha ceremony, who cannot eat on behalf of the forefathers. And that list is all Brahmins. It's not even considering else. It's listing all kinds of Brahmins that are doing anything, basically, but purely studying the Shastras and teaching the Shastras. Any other, or doing deity worship or like this. Anybody else is not even considered. So to find such persons also is impossible. The mantras being chanted properly is impossible. When you're living in a city, you don't have animals running in the forest that are being hunted by the kings. So basically the system can't be done. And they like the best this offering of sweetness. And in that chapter, it's interesting, it explains that that if you actually contemplate it, you know, the offering of the animals and sacrifice is not really a nice thing. You know, the whole system is not very pleasant. So considering that, one should avoid it. So the very Shastra that tells how it should be done recommends that it's not done. And then after that, it mentions that that someone who is a vegetarian for 100 years and someone who does 100 ashramedhi yagyas during that 100 years, they both get the same benefit. So therefore, it's not so important, you know, this offering of flesh to the forefathers. So then that's forbidden in this age. And then sannyas also, because the principle sannyas is for liberation. So that sannyas, which is for the purpose of liberation in this age, that's not allowed. So the actual proper sannyas, that of attaching oneself to Krishna, then that is allowed for the preaching purposes. But just the standard sannyas is not allowed, because that works also on qualities. That the person would have such great qualities of detachment from material energy that they could be detached for a whole lifetime without becoming attached to anything else. Right? So it's pretty dry. Right? So the Vaishnava sannyas then means that you're becoming detached in the material world by becoming attached to Krishna and His service. So therefore you're transferring the taste from one rasa, material rasa, to spiritual rasa. So that's possible. But here this sannyas is talking about someone who gives up all material taste but is not accepting spiritual taste. So that kind of a thing, you'd have to be, you know, have be extremely pious to be able to do just on the mundane platform. So since people don't have that material qualification in this age, then unless it is done in connection with the serving Krishna through the Yuga Dharma for preaching, then it is also not allowed. Also here we see Vyasadeva following the order of his mother. So without an order, then this process wouldn't happen. Of the Devarena Sutopati, that the brother-in-law would beget children on his brother's wife. So without authority from superiors, so in this case the mother, then it wouldn't be happening. Any questions on this? Is it important for Vaishnavas to get sons? Is it part of the Bhagavad Dharma? No. Bhagavad Dharma, you hear the question? See, the Vedic principle of having a son is because the son will perform the Shraddha rites. And without the Shraddha rite, then there's no transference of good karma. You won't go to the heavenly planets. You won't get your good karma. That's one aspect. And second is the son will then, he'll perform Shraddhas. He'll have a son, they'll perform Shraddhas. So the forefathers then will be maintained. So you can't go to the heavenly planets unless you provided for your forefathers. Because your forefathers, they, through their lineage, you have a place. Your status in society, you know, everything. The ability to have a material form is coming because of that lineage. So they must be respected. If you want to go to the heavenly planets, then they must be respected by performance of the Shraddha ourselves, and then having a son who will carry on that tradition. So it has many. So for someone in Karmakanda, then not having a son is a great disaster. But there are also ways for a daughter, then the daughter's son, then becomes the son of her father, you know, in the way of the rites. You know, so simultaneous. She's simultaneously the son of the mother and father, but at the same time, for Shraddha rites, is the son of the grandfather. So like that. Or if any of the brothers have a son, let's say you have five brothers, four of them don't have a son, one does, then that is considered a son for all five. Or even if none of them have, if one of the brother's daughter has a son, then it's considered a son for all of them. So there's ways to get around it. But the point is it's for karma karma. For the devotees, marriage is not for the purpose of sense gratification or elevation to the heavenly planets, performing of yajna and all these different things for these purposes. It's actually for the purpose of freeing ourselves from material attachment. That's actually its purpose. The living entity, having spent so much time in the material world, may find that the attachments to material concepts are still very strong in the heart. So even though intellectually we understand the unimportance of material endeavor, by so much habit, it may not be, the habit may be so much more than our understanding. Right? It means when habit and understanding balance, you get realization. When the understanding is greater than the bad habit, you get realization. But when the habit is more, then you have to work with that. In other words, you have to take that habit and transform it, rather than just ignore it. So then marriage becomes where one then addresses the habit one has for so long and engages every aspect of it in Krishna's service. You know, the facilities, the wealth, the sense gratification, the emotional exchange, you know, whatever rasa is there, then according to Krishna's direction, it's engaged. And to that degree that it's engaged, to that degree it frees one from those attachments and the material world. But if you keep ones for yourself, then those still keep one bound. No, it's reducing. You know, so then if one's fortunate in this life, one can wrap it up at some point. If not, then it will carry on. But then in the future, it will be, the attachments will be less. And eventually we'll get to the point where one can then overcome it. So therefore, son is not essential for the process to work. It means as far as devotional process. But in the working of the family life, then it's a natural thing to have children. Okay, does that make sense? Who? Say it. Perfect sacrifices are allowed. Under what authority? Under what are perfect sacrifices? Forbid them, so then under what authority? Means in other ages they may. But for who are you going to offer it to? No, but who? God is Kali. Okay. Then it has to be done with mantras that have effect. Vedic mantras that have effect. You know what I'm saying? So the animals aren't being brought to life, animals become dinner. See, in a yajna, the animal goes into the fire. It doesn't come out, you know, in some little sauce with your rice. You understand? It doesn't come like that. The priest and the yajaman must take a small piece of the flesh of the animal so that all the karma of the animal that is between their animal life and human life, then goes to the priest and the person performing the sacrifice. But that's, they all sit there and make a nice, you know, nice gravy with thing, you know. It doesn't work like that. You know what I'm saying? So the animal doesn't end up as a meal. It's a sacrifice. The animal gets offered into the fire. You know what I'm saying? So therefore, they're not working under any authority. They're just doing it because, you know, they like to eat. Because Goddess Kali, she doesn't eat the goats. She's not. She's a vegetarian. Right? Shiva and Parvati don't eat these animals. They give them to their ghosts. Ghosts have to eat all these things. So therefore, what are they eating? They're eating ghost
straight. So the process that right now aren't, you know, they're not coming, they're not having the potency.
How was that?
How was the year?
Yes.
I'm saying people can do so many things. You know, people eat bicycles also. Doesn't mean it's, you know, sanctioned by the street. Does that make sense?
While you were talking about unqualified Brahmins, in the Mahabharata story of King Kalmashapa, this Brahmin requests flesh, a meal to the flesh. So that was a little bit confusing. Why a Brahmin would be asking for a meal to the flesh?
Okay. So, you hear? This Maharaj Kalmashapa, then as previously described, that a Brahmin came and requested a meal of flesh. That would be basically meaning a Shraddharai, because that's where they're offered, like that. So in a Shraddharai, then it is the Brahman eats the animal on behalf of the forefather. But he doesn't get the benefit, he just gets the karma, like that. The forefathers get the benefit. So that's why they have to find a very, very, one, very self-controlled Brahman, that he can't enjoy the meal. Like when they're eating, they can't go, wow, this is nice. And no, nothing. It has to be absolute silence. The place where it's offered has to be like next to the bank of the river, a very nice, peaceful place, like that. Everything has to be served perfectly. If anything's wrong, there's a hair in it, it's cold, anything, it's impure in any way, the whole thing is ruined. And that Brahman has to be pure the whole day. When he goes home at night, he has to be pure. He can't go and sleep with his wife, otherwise the whole thing, everybody goes to hell. It's a very technical thing. So only certain Brahmins would be able to do it. You know, and they had to be very powerful to be able to burn off the reactions. In the present day, you have Shraddha Brahmins. They only do Shraddhas. And they're generally considered the bottom of the Brahmins because they turn black from taking so much karma, like that. Yeah. They don't, there's no flesh offered, it's just they feed them whatever, you know, these things. So that's there. Or when they go out and hunting those animals that were there, then they would be offered some kind of sacrifice to offer them. This one, whereas for Kali, it's for her pleasure. When it's a specific one, then the whole animal has to be offered.
So, we as a Vaishnavas, what is our Shraddha ceremony? Should we, do we have anything that we can relate to as a Vaishnavas?
Means, yeah, basically is that the point is when the person leaves, then after some days, then you have a festival and prepare prasad on, you know, how to say it, and distribute it to the devotees, and the benefit of that feeding the Brahmins then goes to that devotee, and then a plate of prasad is offered to that person. So if they're in an unfortunate situation, they're free from that. So that can either be done just as simply as I've explained it, you know, with a nice kirtan, a little lecture and discussion, and then prasad, and like that, and then offering a plate to that person, and then afterwards that plate should be put out somewhere for us. It shouldn't be eaten by them. Or there's some more little technical rules if you want to get into it about the Shraddha Patra, you know, like that. There's a whole puja done, and then that plate that is offered then is given to the foremost person in the assembly and all those kind of things. So there are, depends. If the family is from an Indian background where they have a tradition of performing the Shraddha rites, then you can use that more technical form of it. But it's been adjusted into, you know, what's in line with our Gaudiya Vaishnava, you know, practices. Or it can just be as simple as I mentioned before, that's how Prabhupada established what he did with the Westerners, like that. So since no rite is performed anyway, so therefore this much, it gets the work done. This is the actual main part. So the
see, there's different kinds of yagyas. The Vedic yagyas, the karmakanda, the result comes from the perfection of performance of the ritual. Right? But, so those kind of yagyas then aren't done. But those yagyas that are, in other words, those are what you call kamishti yagyas. There's the desire. Right? You have a particular material desire, you perform those yagyas. So those won't work unless everything's perfect. The priests are perfect, the mantras are perfect, and that. But those that are connected with worshiping the Lord, like that, those are performed, because the operating principle in that is the devotion, the attempt to perform it for the sacrifice, for the pleasure of the Lord. So then those sacrifices become useful. Like that. So anything that's connected with the deities, the deity yagyas for installations, for initiations, for those samskaras that are for the purpose of, spiritual life, like that, then these are performed, there's no problem. Because the essential principle is the devotion. Does that make sense?
Gopavada Goswami, we have this thought here, Saradipika. So sometimes when we have a yagya, like marriage yagya, then we put the forefathers, gurus, put the gurus as forefathers, like Srila Prabhupada is a grandfather, father is the ISKCON gurus, like that. And then we do yagyas like that. That it would mean also that, like, to have a son, it means to, for like somebody is a brahmachari, he cannot have son, so that means he has to preach, and then he has a, it's like, bring more devotees for the ISKCON, or for more devotees to Krishna.
That's one way. But here specifically, it's not so important, but it's considered. So the spiritual line is considered also as sons, so like that. So it could be either way.
Strange philosophies coming up in India and Upasampradayas and starting new so-called spiritual societies and all these things, because it was very rampant to just take something from here and there without real authority. So it's a sense here it's the harmless thing. It's not an important thing. Because the point is Krishna's the child will be taken care of anyway, but that sentiment of a well-wisher is always helpful. Someone is well-wishing towards someone. That's always beneficial. But that can also be expressed just through the mood. It doesn't have to have, you don't have to create an external manifestation. I can't hear the fans.
in this area of study, sacrifice is not allowed. From Yamuna, he wants India, there is only a sacrifice.
Once a year in Puri, there's an animal sacrifice. How is that? Their system, they follow worship Jagannath. They're not following, basically, technically, the systems aren't Vaishnava. They're tantric. Like that. They were established by Shankaracharya. And that, and most likely, because that's more recently, there is probably traditions that go back into previous ages. So I can't say where they're getting it from. But in the Pancharatra system, you don't have this. Also, the other Vedic Vaishnava systems, the Vaikanas and like this, you don't have it. You know, or the Sattvic Tantras, Gotamiya Tantra, and those, you also don't have. So it must be something left over from tradition, you know, earlier in this age or in the previous ages. So I wouldn't be able to say. But, you know, we don't do it. It's very important. It's one of the aspects. Is that to establish a point, sometimes background has to be given, and that background, it may be through a story or a progression of things that we are familiar with, you know, so that we can get an orientation on it, and then we establish the point. So the point is taken, the medium through which we gave it may not be important, so it may be left like that. So that's one, so one has to be able to see which points don't apply. You know, since the process of worshiping the Lord is the essential, then all these side things aren't important. So unless the acharyas have given emphasis to them, then they don't apply for us. You know, someone else may be enough for us. So you have to be able to distinguish between what's primary and what's secondary in the way of, you know, descriptions, rituals, or, you know, whatever may be there. Shri Prabhupada Ki, Asama Vita Bhaktivinoda Ki, Jai Jai Ho.